Hi, I'm Brett Parker, multimedia specialist from the National Provisioner. Today we're speaking with Soumya Nair, Global Director of Consumer Research and Insights for the Kerry Group. Soumya is going to shed some light on the Kerry Group's extensive expertise regarding taste and nutrition and how they deduct which foods consumers will enjoy the most. Soumya, thank you so much for joining us today.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
To start off, could you please clarify the Kerry Group's main intentions and goal with its extensive nutrition data?
Yeah, absolutely. Gosh, it's not just nutrition data, Brett, but we focus on consumer first and pride ourselves in knowing what's really out there in the marketplace before we would say, let's look at our portfolio. Let's look at, you know, what people need. So I think definitely beyond nutrition into taste and people's changing preferences and behaviors. You're speaking with me from an insight perspective and a consumer research perspective, where, like I said earlier, before we started this, we're pretty unbiased when it comes to approaching research or approaching hypothesis. We might have a focus significantly on sustainable nutrition, which is one of our biggest goals, is ensuring that sustainable nutrition reaches more than 2 billion consumers globally. That is the aim. And what would get us there in terms of an outside in knowledge, you know, do we have the right systems in place? Do we have the right technologies in place to service that consumer of the future and to take away all of the external uncertainties that the consumer market will face in the future? That's really the, you know, the distillation of what we intend to do and the purpose of our team. At the heart of it, insights and research is to enable, if you are asking the right set of questions, if we are really creating products, creating solutions, whether it's a flavor, whether it is, you know, a sriracha flavored potato chip out in the marketplace, does it need to have, you know, probiotic strains in it or not? For that outcome, we have to ask a whole host of questions. So we're an always on consumer listening team.
Well, when it comes to analyzing consumer trends in terms of taste or products, do you find that there's any data that remains the most consistent throughout the years?
I don't want to be a cliche, but change is always constant with consumers, whether it's the mode with which we get information. I think relatively in terms of consistency, point of sale is a great indicator of where consumers are spending their dollar, right? That definitely in terms of a data source is consistent. Point of sale information and so on. Over the years, over the last decade alone, we've been shifting where we listen to these consumers, right? Is it a traditional survey methodology where, say, for instance, Brett, I would ask you a set of 5 questions, or I would send you a couple of requests to follow you over a course of a week and understand where you're shopping, how you're shopping, you know, not really necessarily ask you questions, but essentially kind of try to understand your behaviors in your natural environment. Those certainly are traditional methods, which are still strong and valid today. I would say over the last decade, we have been shifting a lot more towards into the social space a lot more, things that consumers leave unsaid. So there isn't really one consistent fashion. You have to be where the consumer is. And sometimes the consumer is on, you know, on TikTok, or sometimes the consumer is on Discord, right? Like, we need to follow them where they are. And that, I'd say, is consistent over the course of the last week, is where we follow them has to be adopted and changed. Luckily for us at Kerry, we do pride ourselves as being the agency internally, like I said before. So we open up our avenues. It's not just traditional consumer research. Sometimes it might just be us, you know, immersing ourselves in the marketplace and trying to understand a whole new geography, trying to understand how people throw food in their trash, right? Take pictures of their refrigerator from sometimes. So there is a wide variety of it, as long as we understand where the consumer is.
Now, in doing your research on consumer tastes, was there any data that completely took you guys by surprise?
Yes, there is a piece this year that was very fascinating because when you really look at traditional, one of our biggest programs, let me actually preface you with one of the recent programs that you might have stumbled upon right now is the Taste Charts program at Getty, where essentially we create a toolkit of mainstream, key, up-and-coming and emerging flavors across several different categories. You know, so for instance, if you say I want to create, you know, I'm a sweet customer and I want to create the next generation of granola bars that are indulgent and craveable, then we would look at our taste charts as a tool, as a mechanism to drive innovation, to say, hey, you know what? You see lemon and mango and, you know, chocolate and strawberry as mainstream, but if you really want to appeal to that next wave of adventurous consumers who really want to kind of try out something unique, then go further out to an emerging flavor bucket. So if you haven't seen our taste charts, I will send that across a couple of, you know, here as well, and so will Ashling. But when you see those, they're really meant to be toolkits that a customer can use, can determine, pick up a flavor. Maybe it's a hibiscus from somewhere. Maybe it is a, my gosh, chipotle from somewhere, and create a nice little chipotle hibiscus granola bar. Now, you see what I mean? Like there is a creative freedom that we apply to those toolkits. It might look really as a toolkit at the end, but there is a month, 2 months that go into actually pulling different sources of information, triangulating that, running workshops with our, you know, application experts, baristas, chefs, you know, marketers as well, what they see on the ground, calibrating those and putting them into a chart that makes sense. So you might not see too much of math associated to it. But believe me, there is so much of math that goes behind it. Right? Why did I put a chipotle and a hibiscus on the sweet chart? I can drill through and say percentage increase. I can say these many launches. I can say this much a size of prize in the marketplace. I can say it had, you know, 8,000 plus influencer posts on it. Right? That is the level and depth of information that would go behind it. But when you provide something as simple, it has to be something that's usable. That our customers or even our DNA teams can create and use as a toolbox. Now, I'd say that is necessary as a program. And the reason why I wanted to talk to you about our taste charts is a great output that shows you multiple sources that lead into that one spot, right? It might be conversations, it might be influencer checks. But what we found over the course of the years, and to your question, what was surprising was the fact that we now see local influences across the regions, right? So it's no longer, you know, not just a lemon or a Meyer lemon. It's a lemon that is in an authentic combination from, say, you know, the Thai region, or it's, you know, finger limes from a certain other region. So there's more nuances across regions and provenance building in, which is the intensity of it is surprising. It's not surprising that it's happening. It's the intensity with which it is happening right now. For instance, lemon was, you know, I keep saying lemon because it is one of the more aha questions that made me double take. It's the one flavor that is common across all charts across 14 other regions. So to know that, oh my gosh, there was just lemon or tomato in a salty snack that was common across all 14 regions that we conduct, you know, taste charts in, that's surprising because I would have expected, you know, more common flavors, right? When you think about salty snacks, there is more commonalities. But we start to realize that each of our micro regions have a story of their own, and cultures are coming on their own. And the intensity with which it is happening right now is quite strong. It might be COVID that impacted supply chain issues that might have impacted. So people are now innovating within the spaces that are possible. There are many different triggers of why that could happen, but consumers are also accepting that. So I'd say that is a big aha. The second aha is the fact that people just are shifting their social media preferences. You know, you might have, in for instance, 5 years ago said, I want to scrape through all of my Instagram posts to understand what people are talking about in that space. But right now, there isn't one social media strategy. We have to go on multiple other sources, like the younger consumers with the cancel culture. Right, they are rejecting social media. They're rejecting surveys. They're rejecting traditional means. So, how do you appeal to those consumers, and how do you find out more about these Gen Zs and the Gen Alphas of the world? So, there are some surprising pieces and pockets which are which keep us inside people on the toes, to be honest, because then it's like, okay, traditional research doesn't work. How do we get to these consumers and how do we understand what it is that they like and they prefer? We attended a recent conference and they said, gosh, the population distribution of generations, right? Like millennials, boomers, Gen Xers. We know that now 44% of the population will soon be just millennials and younger millennials and more so. So we're getting into a world where it's younger populations. So if you're thinking about creating innovation and products, we need to think about that future generation and what they want. And the speed with which that's happening, the speed with which digital media is being applied, is quite shocking, is quite fascinating for us to figure out as well.
All right, so based on your research and findings, what advice would you give to someone, anyone starting their own food business these days?
Now, there is, I would ask what type of food business there would be. The researcher in me is going to be like, give me a proper brief. But I'd say it is hard to create a product in isolation. Don't just think of the outside end consumer preference, but also think about the unmet needs, unsaid, unarticulated conversations. So say, for instance, consumers might say, hey, for instance, say you're creating a nutritional shake, okay? If you ask consumers, they'd be like, oh, strawberry is my favorite flavor, okay? But on a product development space, understanding how to create outside in, consumer-centric products, it might be a jammy strawberry that consumers might want, or a fresh strawberry, or a garden fresh strawberry, or a, trying to understand and articulate what consumers are saying, but putting it in context with product development, sensory sciences, product analytics, like that is really important. And I think when people speak about insights, I have to speak about my sister function with sensory product research too. Is just because consumers say something doesn't mean that they would prefer the taste and the texture of it. So, for instance, if you're saying, hey, I'm creating a high protein product, how much protein would you want? They might say 20 grams, 30 grams, 60 grams of protein. But in application, when it comes to you tasting it, Brett, you might say, oh, I wanted a 30 gram protein. But when I, taste it, I don't want these notes. So, like testing it in application with food and beverages is absolutely critical. And they go hand in hand with consumer perspective, right? So, I'd say, that's one of the most critical spots. Don't just go after what consumers only say, but think about what is left unsaid and on the table is a lot, more important as well. That would be the first piece that I'd say is important. And then, gosh, there is just a whole host of due diligence. But from a consumer insight professional that I am, or from an insight perspective, I'd say please ground yourself in today's consumer and focus their efforts on the future. So say, for instance, today they say, I don't want nutrition, don't change the amount of sugar in my product. But we know that for sustainable nutrition, they need to lower their sugar content, right? You're not really having 26 grams of sugar in a product anymore, pare it back down. How do you enable taste and sweetness to a consumer who's still thinking about taste, but we put these sneak nutrition or sneak health attributes into a product that they feel like they still get that nostalgia kick, or if this is a absolutely tasty product, but they will come back for more, but you have ensured your sustainable kind of position in the marketplace in the future as well. So think about those two elements. I think those are top of mind for me this week. But there's so many host of things, Brett, for somebody who's starting out their journey in food and beverage.
Well, that's fascinating. Well, that's all the time we have for today. So, Sam, I just want to thank you so much for joining us on behalf of the Carey Group.
Absolutely, Brett. Most glad to have you and meet you as well.
And for more video and podcast content, be sure to check out the National Provisioner at nationalprovisioner.com.